Welcome to the Round 14 Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus, and this week we're joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, Marcus. How you going, mate?
Good, thanks. A bit of a solemn weekend, and we'd like to, together with the rest of the football community, extend our thoughts to the Walsh family and very, very sad and crazy situation. Hopefully, the Adelaide and West Coast football clubs can put up good showings this weekend in his name. And this week, we've got a special guest, Dunny, back with us. It's been a very long time, so I know we're both pretty excited to chat Supercoach with Dunny again.
We are.
Welcome back, Dunny.
Thanks for having me, boys. Great to be back on board.
You've been scoring pretty well, I think, sending us some tweets throughout the bye, so I'm anticipating a good report coming right up. I'll kick us off with the score update for the week because came last again this week. I'm just having an awful season. At this point, I really don't think I'm going to turn things around. Because of the Adelaide and Geelong game being cancelled, we reverted to a best 18 system this week and affected different people in different ways. And unfortunately for me, I have a deep team, but most of my premiums got knocked out. So it was much better for me to have 22 players playing for this round because it would have helped me get over the people who had donuts and that. But unfortunately, I ended up with a whole bunch of poor scores. Best 18 just didn't help me at all, and I ended up with 1963. The only saving grace, I think, was Goldstein, vice-captain. All around, not superb. Bontempelli, another 80 score in my team. Dalhouse, 58, was just painful. Got McDonald, still scoring poorly with 65. Wallace, 78. Painful all around. So enough on me. I've dropped down to 7,700th. Hopefully, things get better. Anyway, how'd you go, Mark?
I think I'm about 600 points in front of you now, mate. So I think you're going to have to hope I run out of trades before you if you want to catch up now. I scored 2069, which I thought was all right, but I dropped about 100 spots in the ranking to 1444th. So didn't get my move up the rankings that I was hoping. It would have also benefited me if we hadn't gone to the best 18 system because I don't have many Cats or Crows players and would have had cover in all the positions. McDonald, Gibson, Wallace, Cripps, roll a bit disappointing, maybe Boomer as well. But new recruit Sean McKernan, 91, was pretty good. Yeah, I had a pretty solid weekend. Josh Kennedy, great to see him, 143. He's pumped out a couple of good scores in a row. And finally, Dunny, you'll be on board with me with this one. Jordan Lewis, 125. And he hasn't been able to hit a target for 2 months. And he kicked one off the ground to a lead in the forward 50. Like, he just couldn't miss a target this week. So I don't know where that form's been.
Oh, mate, it was sensational to see that. I think it was his first 100 since about round 8. Mate, I was cheering on every single one of those possessions, that's for sure.
So was I, actually, guys, because he's at 444,000 now and have my eye on him for underperforming Cripps and Wallace. So we'll talk about him shortly. Dunny, how do you score over the weekend, mate?
I know definitely for the first time this year, and I reckon almost the first time since I've been on this podcast, I actually beat both of you guys.
Well, awesome.
Wow. I scored a 2,095, which lifted me up in the rankings. I'm still pretty low, though, at 8,200, so I'm not far behind you now, Marcus.
I know, catching me.
I loopholed Goldstein, so he was my vice-captain. I was really happy with his score. I had Heppel with 144, Kennedy 143, Coladagny 143, Robbie Gray. So I was really happy with those guys. My non-scoring players actually included Dalhouse and Goddard. They were just absolute rubbish for me. So I guess the best 18 certainly helped me out in that circumstance, throwing Mundy in there with his 122 as well. So, yeah, I was pretty happy with the way my guys turned out this weekend.
Nice job, mate. Hasn't Coladagny turned things around in the last month?
Absolutely. I guess I did try and get rid of him early on in the season, but he's had four scores over 100 in his last six now. So, yeah, he's certainly turned it around, and it's been fantastic to watch.
Well, it's good that you come on a high, Dunny. It's good to have you in good spirits.
Thanks, mate.
We'll go to our league update now, and you haven't been on with us for a while, but since you've last been on, we've had leagues just surge into the top 15. So currently, I think 2, 4, 6, 8 of the top 11 we managed to hold on to over the weekend. A little bit of a change up the top. Supercoach Coach Queens moved up to first, and Supercoach Coach number 1 dropped to second, which is
the first time. I'm in number 1.
overall, leagues have done very well. So well done to everyone in the community. We seem to be holding on. Hopefully we don't all run out of trades, hey?
Surely 8 leagues worth of teams can't run out of trades.
It's been fantastic, guys, to see so many of the Supercoach Coach leagues up there. I'm really proud to be a member of actually 2 of those leagues in the top 15. So great work to the community. It's been fantastic.
Don't forget, supercoachcoach.com.au/forums. Jump on with us and get involved in the conversation. Good to have more of our podcast listeners on board. Now, onto a quick group update for our Supercoach Coach group. The top scorer for the week was Asian Assassins, 2,298. That's massive. Wow. How did you score that, mate? Well done.
Member of our Queens League as well, number one.
Awesome. A shout out to Comedy's Legion as well, who's coach, 2,207th. He broke into the top 100 not long ago. He's now into 28th, so a huge charge. Well done to you, coach.
Definitely listens to the show, so obviously gets his advice from a good place.
And then we've got Travesty, dropped one spot to third with 2078, and Nate's Nags still hanging in there, 60th with 2042, so well done to all of you. Don't forget, you can ask us questions on a Tuesday on facebook.com/supercoachcoach and on Twitter @supercoachcoach. We'll go through the questions from social media this week by position. So we'll start off in the back line. And the first question this week is from Brad or @BXE100. Will you trade Oxley to Rant? So we got a couple of questions about Oxley. I still have him in my team. I held off for a week because of the best 18. And that was pretty daft in the end because Oxley just scraped into my best 18, but Rant had a massive one. Mark, you'd be pretty happy because after you traded him in, there was a period there where he was a bit shaky, but 120 and 111, you must be pretty happy.
Yeah, I think he scored 50 on debut for my team, and I was very concerned about what I'd done. Against Buddy, he scored really, really low in that first half, destroyed Buddy in the second half, and got to about 120. And I think he did a pretty similar thing on the weekend, where had a very quiet first half, but really dominated in the second half and got up to 111. So after 2 really strong weeks, the fact that people are talking about bringing him in is awesome. For 20,000, Oxley to Rand, I think that's a pretty good move. Didn't think it cost any money last week. I think you would have made 10,000 if you made it last week. If you do have cash, I'd probably be going for other defenders out there. There are some defenders that I think that are potential to score up to 10 points higher than Rance. But if you don't have a lot of cash, I think Rance is a pretty good option. If you were looking at alternatives at the price, I think Yaron's a pretty good one as well.
The key to this question is, will you actually make enough points over the next 9 rounds from this single upgrade to be worth the trade? So I think I would agree with you, Mark. If I was looking to make the upgrade, I think I'd look for someone with a little bit more consistency and maybe a bit higher ceiling as well, just because there's not many rounds to actually make points from until the end of the season. Dunny, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I don't mind Rance as a selection, but I think you're right. I think, you know, if you can spend that extra money and go up to someone else, then I would probably be looking at that as well.
You got to be careful here that a lot of it depends on what you're expecting from Oxley. If Oxley, who's had 250s in a row, if Oxley keeps producing those low 50 to 70 scores and doesn't have many big hundreds left in him, which we have seen rookies in the past fall off the cliff like that a little bit and not have those big scores in him, then that actually makes the difference on any upgrade actually quite significant.
Mark, you're primarily concerned that Oxley's going to fall off a cliff, which absolutely does happen with rookies, and I'm definitely one who likes avoiding that. So do you think Oxley is a candidate for falling off a cliff, and do you think, therefore, he warrants a trade this week with a break even of 124?
I don't have him, so I guess I hope he falls off a cliff. Not literally, of course, but yeah, I hope that he does slow down a little bit, and I think everyone might make a slightly different assessment on that. I think in the past, it probably has been better to get rid of these guys because generally there's more chance of them falling off than actually holding on to their high averages. What do you guys think? Have you still got him, Marcus?
Yeah, I do. And this is the week, you know, I'm considering, do I keep him or do I drop him off? I think he's pretty much going for me this week. I'm still a little bit on the fence just because I'm low on trades, but I think, you know, it already cost me this week 50 points not trading him, and I'm worried that, you know, the trend will continue. So I think I agree with you guys.
Are you looking at Rant?
Kind of depends on what I'm going to do with the rest of the money. If I want to pay for a more expensive midfielder, because I need to trade one of Wallace or Cripps, basically, which is another big conversation for the week this week.
Have you got Tom McDonald?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, if someone was considering McDonald versus Rance, who would you choose? I know that if you look at McDonald's last 3 weeks versus Rance last 2 weeks, it's obvious that Rance would stand up, but over the season, McDonald's averaging 5 points higher a week. Yeah. Interested to see who you would pick out of those two guys.
Yeah, I think definitely McDonald, just because, like you mentioned, even though he's dropped off over the course of the season, he's only had 3 games under 85, which is great for a key position defender.
just actually having a look at who McDonald's got coming up for the rest of the season. And if you look at his run shortly, he's got Essendon, Brisbane, St Kilda, Collingwood, North Melbourne, all at the MCG. Then Bulldogs, Carlton, Frio, Giants. So that's not a terrible run home, to be honest.
They could definitely sneak some games, especially with the quality of footy they're playing. I'm not going to talk them down because my team got smashed by them.
the only thing I would say about McDonald is if you are looking to pick him up, I'd probably give it another week with his 163 break-even this week.
But with Oxley, I guess, if you're moving, you've got probably
this week. Yeah, true. I mean, yeah, you're going to lose money on Oxley.
We got questions about Burgoyne as well as an option for Oxley, but I think he's probably a little bit inconsistent. And even though he scored 210 plus scores in the last three games, I think you'd only really want to bring Burgoyne in as sort of a swing player. And it's kind of hard to justify Oxley to Burgoyne in that sort of swing position. I think on field, you wouldn't be that confident about Burgoyne outscoring Oxley by too much over the rest of the season.
Maybe not, but Burgoyne could go on a big 10-week run. It is possible. If you want to take a risk, Burgoyne does have potential upside. He's also got potential downside.
For me, the consistency is just not there. As you said, you know, if you look at his last five averages, 80, and his last three averages, 93. You know, there's a few big scores, but there's some very low scores in there as well.
So if we look to maybe guys with slightly higher scoring potential, Liam Pickens, the one that probably stands out. If you can afford Oxley to pick in, since round three, his lowest score has been 89. So he seems like a standout option and almost a must-have if you had the cash for him.
Well, I don't have him, so no. I think him and Hodge are probably, him, Hodge and Shaw are probably the three standout defenders.
To be honest, if you don't have Hodge, I mean, he's only another 5,000 on from Pickin. Personally, I'd be going Hodge in that circumstance. The other one that I would look at and that I do have is Corey Enright. He's having a pretty good season, averaging 96.
He's had a rest because they missed on the weekends. So.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, he's actually had 2 weeks off because they had the bye in round 13 as well. So his old body will probably do pretty well out of that, you would think. So I really like him as an option. You know, it's just another guy that you can consider.
The last defender I want to cover is Gibson. We all saw a lot of potential in him in terms of Fawley coming in, but Fawley and Lake have been in and out. He's only averaged 90. 52 is his lowest for the season, but before that, he's only scored 70 pluses. He's only hit the ton four times so far this season. But surely, you know, in terms of looking at his average, this is about as poorly as he can go, and surely there's room for improvement. And he's already averaging 90 for the season, so he looks like a pretty tempting option at 435K to me.
The concern I have with him is with Frawley out of the side, and particularly if Lake goes down again, you know, he's got to play that lockdown role, which will limit his scoring a bit. But if they get Frawley back, I'm not sure how many weeks away he is. His role changes when Frawley or Lake are not in the side, and that just worries me with his scoring.
Mark, you've actually got Gibson.
I do, and I'm not overly confident having him. He certainly hasn't produced what I was expecting, but if you had have asked me about Rance 2 weeks ago, I might have given you a similar opinion. Yeah. I think these key defenders, they're just naturally up and down with their scoring, and that's why it's a good idea to pick them up as cheap as you can, and I guess McDonald, Rance, Gibson all sitting pretty cheap this week and probably all reasonable options.
So of all the guys that we talked about, let's just get your favourite one, Mark.
It's really hard. Just go off your own judgment. Sorry. I think that... they've all got their good sides and their downsides.
Dunny, do you want to stick your neck out?
I really like Enright. He's got the runs on the board. If you don't have Hodge, you've got to grab him. But I don't mind Rance either, to be honest.
Hodge is a standout. Pickin can match that sort of scoring potential. And Mark, you mentioned Shaw. So if you don't have any of those three, but of the cheap guys, I like what Mark was saying. Get them as cheap as you can. I mean, Rance sort of fits the bill. McDonald, Rance, and Gibson all have question marks over them in my eyes. On to the midfield now. I want to talk about Jobe Watson because we get news that he's out for the rest of the season, which is sad.
Yeah, copped a pretty big bump against the Hawks and played through on his 200th and obviously played terribly. I think he had less than 10 possessions along with Goddard and been playing full forward for most of the last month at least. And yeah, gone for the rest of the season, which is really disappointing. It seems like he almost needs a bit of a break though. He seemed pretty down about the whole situation. And yeah, I guess it gives an opportunity to some young bombers to get out there. And I guess if you own Jobe at the moment, it's very unlucky because he's 440,000, so it's pretty hard to move him on to anyone very good.
Which brings us to Jordan Lewis. You guys both mentioned him at the start of the show. He scored 125 on the weekend, so his break-even's now 60, bottomed out at 444. That seems like a decent trade, Watson to Lewis.
It's pretty tough talking to Lewis owners. Like, if you look at his scoring trajectory last year and you compare maybe where he's at this year, you would think, wow, that's an awesome trade-in because he just went nuts in the second half of last year. But if you had been through as a Lewis owner for the last 10 weeks, it's been extremely frustrating. He missed, two or three with a suspension, then missed one with a sore shoulder. He just keeps kicking the ball straight out on the full, getting tagged out of games. It's just been a horrible experience with Lewis. So it is pretty hard to recommend him as a trade-in option.
Yeah, it's hard to recommend him, but at that price, could be worth a trade. If you got 40K in the bank, you could go to Steel Sidebottom, who potentially has a better upside than Jordan Lewis at the moment. Not saying that Lewis can't go big, it's just he doesn't have those runs on the board, as Mark was saying.
So I thought that speaking to two Lewis owners, I might get a bit more positivity because he's pretty high on my target list this week. I know his scoring pattern doesn't look brilliant this year, but at the same time, he did have a sore shoulder. He didn't have continuity. He scored 63, 57, and 78. But if those are his three poor scores for the year and he goes on to average 110 plus, this could turn out to just be a poor three-game patch, and this is a bargain period for Jordan Lewis.
I'm praying that you're right, Marcus. I'm praying.
Me too, mate. Me too.
I mean, I agree with what Mark said. You know, us Jordan Lewis owners have been a little bit down in the dumps in the last few weeks. And
yeah,
the 125 that he pulled in on the weekend was far more what I expected from him. Yeah, if he can put up 110s from here on out, I'll be one very happy owner.
My chief concern is that Hawthorn's next two opponents are Frio and Sydney. I guess if you have Patrick Cripps, they have Richmond, Fremantle, and Hawthorn next. That's equally terrible, and you could consider a Cripps to Lewis side swap if you don't have much cash. But if you had more cash to actually play with, I'd probably avoid taking Lewis against Frio and Sydney, and then, you know, wait to see if he can actually continue this run. So we'll move on to the next question now, and it's from Steve or @leader80, and it's big question for the week. How risky is it to get back on Rockliffe? So yeah, at 481,000 and having ping-ponged in and out of teams, the jury is out, but his break-even's only 62. So if he has a big game, he will go up 30K in price.
I wonder how many people are going to bring Rockliffe in for the third time. Like they start with him, trade him out, bring him back, get rid of him, bring him back. I'm sure there's going to be a few coaches out there that'll do it. I did bring him in and had to get rid of him. I think realistically at 481, after having 6 weeks off, you'd think that realistically he should be healed this time. Shouldn't be a concern that he's going to re-injure those ribs. So I think he's an awesome pick at 481. There's probably still some concerns that we had at the start of the year about his role in the team and whether he plays a bit more up forward, seeing as they don't have so many key forwards going. But, I mean, if he can average close to 110 for 481, given his potential upside to do more than that, I think that he's a very solid pick at that price.
At 481, that's bloody cheap for a player that can deliver you the scores that he can deliver.
I don't think he's a risky pick at that price, especially considering we got a lot of questions this week about Cripps and Wallace, even though last show we spent a bit of time on that. And Rockliffe is certainly a great option for them because they're straight swaps.
Realistically, I'm at a point that I'd probably like both of those guys out of my side if I could and get some super premiums in. It just depends on whether it's worth doing it, being limited on trades.
Off the 480K price range and into the stratosphere is Gary Ablett. 688,000. He dropped 45,000. That's his first price change for the year. His break even still a massive 196. And the question we got from Paul Maltman, thoughts on getting ahead of the masses and grabbing the Lord Jesus Christ himself this week. The resurrection was brilliant. So after 124 in his first game, 31 disposals, 2 goals, tongues are a wagging. And I hear that you, Mark, I'm especially tempted.
Yeah, I am actually pretty tempted. I have what is essentially unlimited funds. I think he was on about 15 at quarter time and it didn't look like the old Ablett was going to come back, but certainly did and dominated the last quarter, kicked a couple of goals. Just the sort of performance you'd expect from Ablett. And if that's game one, it'd be interesting to see what game two, three, and four are like. I'm actually considering, depending on what happens with Bennell, I'm considering Wallace and Cripps to Rockliffe and Ablett this week, just because I do have the money and, like you said, getting a jump on the field. Realistically, if you don't have the money to just spend willy-nilly, then I think that you should probably wait a week and wait till he comes down and probably you get some more information by doing that. But the money's no concern to me. It would mean going down to three trades, though.
Ouch.
Yeah, my concern with Ablett is that AFL is a bloody tough game to play. And there's so few players that can play consistently week in, week out. And I just doubt missing, 11 or 10 weeks of football and still not being 100%. Anyway,
at least he's been running for the last 11 weeks, and you're underestimating. This is Gary Ablett. You know how good he is, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely true. And I think it's definitely good signs to see Gold Coast put away, was it their second or third win for the season against North Melbourne, and a convincing one at that. So if they aren't struggling week to week and they don't need Gazza to lift them on his shoulders by himself, I think he'll be a pretty darn good pick. My worry is that if Gold Coast start dropping off again, Ablett has to shoulder everything. Like, we've seen it with Selwood. We've seen it with plenty of good players in the league that without support, they just won't score. Like, Cochin didn't start scoring until Richmond started playing together as a team and start winning games. So
this is Gary Ablett. You seem to be forgetting that fact. Yeah. Has he had support for the last 5 years? No. Has it mattered? No.
But he's never played under this much duress. Anyway, I'm just bringing up the risks. My plan this whole time has been Wallace to Ablett. That's not panned out because Wallace hasn't been scoring too well, and Ablett scored 124 upon return.
I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on my situation of Wallace and Cripps potentially to Rockliffe and Ablett. Leaves me 100K and three trades.
They're excellent trades to make, but you know, the thing that concerns me most about your situation, mate, would be down to three trades. I mean, if I had the money to do those two trades this week, I'd definitely do the Rockliffe one. Personally, for me, Ablett, I'd be waiting just that one more week just to save probably another $40,000-odd. But if you got unlimited funds like you seem to have, you know, I don't know how you've managed that, mate.
I don't dislike it. I just think it's very, very risky. And I'm surprised because I think we were giving general rules and you said that in general, if you had less than six trades, you'd stop making upgrades.
I did. And I was trying to convince myself that that was the right thing to do. It's just, I'm not sure that I can pass up bringing the top two scorers from last year into my team for Wallace and Cripps, even if it takes me down to three trades. And look, I'm not confident with that at all because it's been a high injury season. I hope we don't see the end of last year repeated at the end of this year, which we probably will. And just remember this show. You can say I told you so as much as possible because I probably shouldn't do it, but it's probably going to happen.
It's the aggressive strategy. And if funds don't matter, why wait a week? Might as well get the most points you can out of the trade and pull the trigger this week. I think the fact that you have premium cover makes that trade a lot better because if you get any single injuries, you're able to cover them with a premium without feeling the pinch at all. So it's aggressive, but 8 weeks, three trades. I think I've been in a similar situation before, and hopefully injuries don't continue. That's the only thing. It's been a crazy season for injuries.
Yeah, you're right. I've got a pretty reasonable bench, pretty deep across all the rookies. So hopefully that holds me in good stead. Get around it, mate. The hype. Ablett hype. Hopefully he scores 195 this week, loses like $1,000 of his price, and nobody else can get him.
For the rest of our listeners, I would actually agree with Dunny and hold off. I mean, unless you're in a rare situation where money doesn't matter. And I think for most people, I would definitely wait the week and wait and see. I know there were a lot of people wanting to jump the gun, but it seems unnecessary to me. What if he scores 60? Then you want to wait another 2 or 3 weeks. So, yeah, I would wait.
Yeah, don't listen to him. Just get him.
I agree with Marcus. Sorry, Mike, but yeah, I'm in the conservative side there. At least one more week anyway.
We'll move on to the Rucks now. Marich out.
Oh, is God.
Suspended for only 1 week with the strike, so that's unfortunate for his owners. And the question that we have for Marich, the first one's from DMAC_55 on Twitter. Is Marich to Goldie a must without cover? So if you didn't have cover, would you recommend trading to the premier scoring Ruckman? He's averaging 119 now after five massive weeks of 128+. Ridiculous. He's probably been the best captaincy option over these last 5 weeks. It's insane. Do you guys think that's a must-do trade if you don't have Goldstein and Marich is out for the week? He's very expensive, 630K though.
Yeah, I don't think it's a must-do trade. I think that price is definitely scary. I think recommending it, I'd probably cop a fair bit of flack for that. But if you look at Goldstein's run home last year, the last 10 to 12 rounds, I think he averaged about 125 in that period. So he has shown that the last 5 weeks might not be a fluke and he might be able to actually do that over an extended period of time. So I guess from that perspective that if you're deep on trades like Dunny, I wouldn't normally recommend trading for a 1 week donut. I think that you're probably going to make those points up later, but it really depends how many trades you've got. If you've got more than six or seven trades and the money's there, I would be very tempted to make that move because you could gain 20 points a week on Marich when he does come back.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the problem is it is nearly a $200,000 jump up to Goldstein. So, yeah, you're going to need to have that unlimited funds that that Mark has, as well as a few trades. But if you can get Goldstein in, I think, yeah, clearly he is the best ruckman to have at the moment. I agree with Mark. Normally, I would not recommend trading for a one-week issue. What I would be trying to do would be switching one of my forward-line rookies to someone like Sean McKernan and use him in that week in the ruck if you've got the dual position availability there, and then swing him back because he'll be good forward-line cover for you going forward.
I agree with that, Dunny. I like that strategy a lot. The only pure ruckman that I would recommend picking ahead of a ruck forward cover for a one-week injury is Goldstein. And just to put in perspective how well he's scoring this season, he's averaging 119.46. We've seen ruck scoring drop across the board by 5 to 10 points. Based on last year's scoring, this guy's averaging 125 to 130. That's crazy. Absolutely crazy if you think about it. If ruck points weren't scaled down this year, he could be matching Nat Fyfe. He's in ridiculously good form. He's definitely a guy that I would want to have to close out the season if I didn't have him yet. And I think most of our community have him, and that's why probably we're punching out such big scores. But we'll get on to Daniel Gates' question next, or at IamDanielG on Twitter. And this is what you were talking about, Danny. Is McKernan suitable for ruck forward cover for Merritt this week and to sit on bench for the remainder of the season? So it's my preferred strategy. It's Danny's preferred. Mark, how about you?
Well, I've got McKernan. I think he's looked really good in the two games so far, and despite the fact that we got thumped against the Saints, I think he was pretty good. He got well and truly beaten by Longer in the ruck, but still looked like a good Supercoach scorer for the rest of the year, and with the Bombers' injuries and stuff, his job security seems pretty strong. The thing I like about McKernan is that he can cover two positions. If you have someone like an O'Brien or Cox or whatever, so he sort of comes back in, and I guess he's just doing what we expected Bell Chambers to do. Like, if you're the number one ruck for a team, you should average at least 80 no matter what. And that's what McKernan should be able to do. Bell Chambers just injured or shit. I don't know.
I think that's exactly right, mate. He's doing exactly what I thought Bell Chambers would do when I had Bell Chambers at the start of the year. Thankfully, he's turned into Goldstein now for me.
McKernan's probably the standout option as a forward ruck just because he's only had the one price movement. Break even is negative 12 and he still has value left in him. Gorn scored only a 66 and that starts his tough ruck schedule. So anyone who's looking for a forward ruck, probably avoid him now that he's gone all the way up to 450. Ryder's an interesting one at 407 and could turn things around eventually, but he scored a 57 on the weekend and I would probably wait before bringing him in.
Wow, yeah, he better bloody turn things around.
I'm so glad we got rid of him. I think Bork got ripped off in that deal.
If only I joined the hate bandwagon a bit earlier, mate.
What do you think about just keeping Marek and just copying the donut?
I think that if I had Goldstein and McKernan wasn't an option this week, that's what I'd do. But I think McKernan is just too attractive at 300K. Like, he'll serve as ruck cover for the rest of the season in case this ever happens again. So I like the McKernan trade.
Yeah, I'm never a massive fan of taking a donut if I don't have to. But realistically, if I'm a bit low on funds and also low on trades, I think you need to do that. As we said earlier, you never really look for a one-week trade. If you plan to keep Merritt for the rest of the year, then I think it's certainly a way to go.
On to the forward line now. Billy Brown's questions up next. Harley Bunnell, keep or trade? So basically we're waiting for news with him. So he missed last week to protect his welfare, but they hadn't actually made a decision on his punishment for being caught with drugs. It's a bit of a wait and see situation until the board make a decision on him.
The news is expected to come in on maybe Wednesday, but more likely on Thursday about what the punishment is. But having Bennell myself, it might not be Cripps or Wallace that goes out. It might be Bennell that goes out this week for me, just depending on how things work out there, because, I mean, he's a bit of an injury concern as well. He is one of the top scoring forwards over his last four games, and he probably got a lot to prove. It's just, I really am concerned about the public relations issue that they're going to have if they don't make him sit out for a period.
Yeah, I agree completely, mate. I think he will miss at least another week, if not two. I don't think the board will throw him straight back into the game this week. I think you've got to trade him.
Bit of a wait-and-see situation, but I think we're probably leaning toward trading because it's likely they'll want to set strict standards to stamp out this culture. So the news is looking a bit grim for him, and unfortunately for his Supercoach owners as well. On to the next question in the forward line, and again, a bit of a question mark. Rick Dovey's asking about Ruffy. Again, man, so many unfortunate things has been popping up in the AFL community, but he got diagnosed with some melanoma on his lip. He missed last week after they'd cut it out, but he's still recovering this week, receiving results on some tests sometime this week. So he might still be out for a little bit yet. Is there any sense to trading him out?
I think I'd probably try and wait one more week if you could, if you had cover. I think you'd hope to know a bit more about it by next week.
If we don't hear anything this week and you do have adequate cover, then I would look at holding him.
The other advantage is if you wait one week, Bartel is expected to play this week and he has a break even of about 230.
Nice one.
Apparently he dominated in the VFL this week from what I hear as well.
As you would expect, a Brownlow medalist playing VFL. Yeah.
So the last topic this week, we're just going to run through some rookies. Dom Dunn's questions first about Pocket Rocket Caleb Daniel. So he'd be going a week early, but he really impressed. He came on early as a sub.
He came on for Roughhead pretty early, I think, in the first half. Caleb Daniel was a fan favourite at the start of the year. He was going to be in a lot of teams if he was named round one, but he picked up a bit of an injury. I think he played some sub games over the Nabs, so the concern going forward would be that he would maybe fill the role of the sub, especially after doing well in that role. One thing that is good for his job security is Toby McLean, who was looking such an awesome pick as a rookie. His owners got very, very unlucky that he's done his shoulder late in that game and won't be around for at least 6 weeks. Really risky going a week early, and if you can avoid doing that, I probably wouldn't.
I agree. You know, I actually saw a bit of him last year. He played for South Adelaide in the Sandful. The kid can certainly play, and he showed that on the weekend. I wouldn't go a week early, but certainly look for it the week after if you're looking for a good downgrade.
I think Jack Steele's the only other real forward. If you don't have him and you're looking for a downgrade, mid-forward, obviously, so even if he drops out, he's got some flexibility as a non-playing swingman. 84 and 69, first two games. Couldn't really ask for much more, and we expected great things from him, so he's the standout pick this week.
Due to his dual position status, is he a must-have?
I think he's close to it. I do. I was really impressed with what I saw from him on Saturday afternoon.
It's hard to say a rookie is a must-have at this stage of the season, just because if you're light on trades, even if you're missing out on a great rookie that gives you flexibility, whatever, you just can't afford to be trading on bench players. If you have trades, if you still need any sort of downgrade, if you're going to trade in a rookie, basically, he's a must-have. I would definitely bring him in. But if you're to the point where your last few trades are allocated for injury, I wouldn't bother trading him in.
Fair enough. I just think that he seems like the sort of guy that could be the best rookie that we're going to see for the rest of the year.
Like average 80 sort of thing for the rest of the year.
I mean, even if we averaged 70 as a dual positions player, that'd be awesome.
If you were low on trades, I think you'd still pass, but would you consider him a must-have, Mark?
No, I was honestly just trying to check your opinion, mate. Mm. I think that he is bordering on that. It just depends on whether you are looking to bring in a rookie this week, I guess.
Another DPP to look at that debuted on the weekend, another guy that, you know, we're looking for in the preseason, Maynard, back mid for Collingwood, 117, scored 52. He wasn't the sub, so he got to play the game out.
I think they dropped Seedsman on the weekend for Maynard. He's been in the emergency for probably 6 or 7 weeks, and he did look pretty good. You'd think that he'd get at least a second game, but I think there'd be a fair bit of competition for his spot, so he'd have to perform pretty well to hold on to that for the rest of the year. So I definitely want to see at least one more week from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know much about him at all, but I agree. I think I'd want to see another week.
If you're looking for a rookie on the bubble this week, Nick Holman is on the bubble, 123,000, 30 and 63. Would you guys pick a player like Holman, or would you perhaps wait a week to see how Maynard goes? If you're looking to downgrade, for example, a backline rookie like a Hamling or a Lever at this stage.
You would think that Holman should get games with Carlton's youth policy for the rest of the year. Doesn't seem like a great pickup, pretty decent sub chance, but I guess if you're desperate.
I wouldn't be picking him up unless I was real desperate to find some cash.
And the last rookie to talk about, Nick O'Brien for Essendon, 124,000 midfielder, 49 and 61.
Hocking will almost certainly come in this week after playing a couple of games in the VFL. O'Brien has not looked really up to standard at the AFL level. He's been destroying VFL. He had 37 touches in each of his last two games in the VFL. Hasn't been able to bring that form up to AFL level. Doesn't seem to have the disposal efficiency and probably handballs a bit too much. But look, the Bombers are in a rebuild, so anything could happen with our team selections. And we may as well keep giving these young blokes a go and give them a go in the middle and see whether we're going to give him a spot on the list next year. Yeah, I don't think he's a high-scoring rookie, and his job security is going to be a week-to-week proposition.
All right, so I think out of the guys, Steele obviously stand out. If you already have Steele, did talk about a few options who you'd only trade to if you needed the cash for a downgrade this week. Otherwise, Caleb Daniel or Braden Maynard seem like they could be decent options in another week. So that's the rookie wrap-up.
The alternative to Steele for me would be Lambert, who's still only 123,000.
Unfortunately, he's not scored more than 45, so I hope he turned things around, but he's in my team at the moment. Yeah, still an option at that price mark. That's it for this week. We continue to have a lot of things to talk about, whether it be injuries or underperforming players like Cripps and Wallace.
Well, if I follow your advice to use two trades this week, then I won't have much to talk about for the next few weeks.
And I'm considering the same, Mark. I'm considering burning two trades for two upgrades this week as well. So
you won't do it. You're a pussy.
Oh no, this sounds like a recipe for disaster now. Donnie, massive thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure, always to have you on with us.
Thanks, boys. Love doing the show with you guys. Always good fun.
Yeah, we'll have you on, obviously, again throughout the season. So we'll catch you again soon. And to the rest of our community, well done for holding up our leagues. Hopefully, you're in for big score again this week. And we'll catch you again this time next week. See ya.
See ya.
See you, everyone.